This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It means essentially that they're not so dependent on, if you like, what Ramaphosa described as crumbs from the table. It means that they can make their own and that they won't have to wait for the richer countries to send them what they have left over.
That's Catherine Field, a journalist and analyst in Paris, on the announcement at the EU and AU summit that six African countries will soon get technology to help produce coronavirus vaccines. Details coming up. Also, the UN Food Programme says Africa's Sahel region is facing unprecedented food insecurity. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The annual meeting of leaders from the African Union and European Union wraps up today after discussions on development, investment, vaccine production, and security. Journalist and analyst Catherine Field in Paris has been following the summit, and she speaks with VOA's Kate Bond-Dawson. The highlight, she says, was an announcement that six African nations, Egypt, Kenya, Nigeria, Senegal, South Africa, and Tunisia, will receive the technology to make mRNA vaccines. Many of the COVID-19 vaccines are made with mRNA technology.
Certainly the big headline issue has been that it was announced at the summit, and there was a big ceremony there Friday morning, this announcement that the first six countries will receive technology needed for the production of the COVID vaccine. Now, establishing the vaccine production in these six countries is very important. It meets a need. It meets the urgency for Africa to have more of these vaccines produced in its own time and available there on the ground. It means essentially that they're not so dependent on, if you like, what Ramaphosa described as crumbs from the table. It means that they can make their own and that they won't have to wait for the richer countries to send them what they have left over. Of course, what a lot of the African delegates wanted was the wavering of intellectual property rights, particularly Macky Sall asked for this. Cyril Ramaphosa asked for this. They said, look, you know, this is really what they need, because that would truly empower Africa. But of course, your kind words, encouraging words from the European Union and also from Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, but essentially, in polite terms, they said no. Emmanuel Macron says that this would stifle innovation, that if you didn't make it possible for these big companies to be able to get a return on their investment from these types of, not just the COVID vaccine, but others as well, they said then they won't do it. So it was...
Now, I understand there had been talk of the EU setting up a big fund for development, investment, and projects and aid. What came of that?
Yes, they did in fact get the green light for this 150 billion euro Global Gateway Africa Fund. That's over 7 years. The sort of investment that some of that is looking at is not just vaccines and also startups. There was also talk about data transfer, your undersea cables that would help Africa get more of that, if you like, that link up to Europe, which would have your data transfer, faster internet. That actually has been seen, though, as a fresh start, if you like. But certainly what, again, we're seeing the EU trying to find some ways to pull some of those African countries away from Chinese development and give it more towards this Africa-Europe alliance, which is what the EU is hoping will eventually come.
Now, you mentioned earlier on climate change and climate change mitigation efforts. What was discussed there?
This is one area which has been very interesting, and one which the French have been pushing quite heavily, is this challenge which you've got in Africa to come forward with more protein resistance crops, crops that are not as thirsty but are high in protein. So you're looking at beans, pulses. And what they've done is the EU have come up with this idea of practical help, and that means regional platforms that will act as a hub, so as you have more of an information coordination between NGOs, regional organizations, and funders. So what they're doing is they're setting up this whole platform that's going to include things like the World Bank, Africa Development Bank, Europe Investment Bank, and they're going to be leading the way to try and move towards this. And so you're looking in particular countries like Benin, Chad, Ivory Coast, Senegal, to move that way so that they can better identify those less thirsty crops. You make sure that they have more ability to be able to grow them and to market them. And really, so is that you are not so dependent on some of the other heavy crops that are thirsty.
That was Catherine Field, a journalist and analyst in Paris. She was speaking with VOA's Kate Barn-Dawson. This is the first time WHO has supported efforts to reverse engineer commercially sold vaccines, making an end run around the pharmaceutical industry that had largely prioritized supplying rich countries over poor in both sales and manufacturing. Africa currently produces just 1% of coronavirus vaccines. According to the WHO figures, only 11% of the population in Africa is fully vaccinated, compared with the global average of about 50%. The six African countries will get the technology from the World Health Organization's Global mRNA Vaccine Hub based in South Africa to help them start producing vaccines as soon as possible. Yesterday, French President Emmanuel Macron announced the withdrawal of his country's troops from Mali in the next 6 months. He also mentioned the closure of three army bases. He gave hints the troops could be relocated to Niger, stressing forcefully that France and its partners will not leave the Sahel. For reaction to France's decision, I spoke with Michael Shurkin, Director of Global Programs at 14 North Strategies.
It's clear to me that a large number of Malians would greet this news with pleasure. They are of the opinion that France has been acting against Malian interests and are very suspicious of France. And they believe a lot of Malians clearly think that they would be better off without France and with or without the Russians. So for some, it's about like, well, we've got this new partner in the Russians, and the Russians are going to be better. I think others are less focused on the Russians and are more interested in this idea of Mali standing alone and standing on its own 2 feet without sort of France mucking about in the country, because they're all convinced that the French have either been completely ineffective or have actually been working, trying to promote an agenda that's contrary to Mali's interests.
What are the reactions from other Sahel countries, like Burkina Faso, Niger?
I think with the others, it's the same kind of feeling. There's a mixture of feeling. I think that for some, there's the sentiment that the French have either failed or the French are actually helping the bad guys, right? So some basically, you know, don't think that the French are the bad guys, but think that the French have simply failed. So who needs them? Whereas others actually blame the French for a lot of things. Whereas others are, I think, more sober about it and think that whatever the French failures have been, they need French help because they need help fighting jihadists. So it's a question of, like, do you really think that you can do better without help, or do you need the help? So I think that there are a lot of mixed views here, and I think a lot of ambivalence across the region.
And what do you think the reaction of the jihadists would be to all this goings-on?
Well, I can only imagine that the jihadists are absolutely delighted because the French have been fighting them and the French have been helping the Malians fight them. And this rising tide of anti-French sentiment, it only serves the jihadists. This is a clear win for the jihadists. There's talk about whether or not the Malians will negotiate with the jihadists, and without addressing of whether or not they should or should not, the fact of the matter is that the French have been providing, supplying pressure, they've been putting military pressure on jihadists. So it means that if the Malians were to negotiate now with the jihadists, they would do so from a position of relative weakness, or even greater weakness than they had without the French being around. So this is a real win for the jihadists, and I don't see any other way around this.
That was Michael Shurkin, Director of Global Programs at 14 North Strategies. He talked with me from Washington, D.C. The UN World Food Programme says Africa's Sahel region is facing unprecedented food insecurity caused by soaring prices, terrorist activity, high regional demand, and COVID-19. The WFP's representative in Burkina Faso warns the situation is critical, with millions more people facing hunger in the coming months. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
In large areas of Burkina Faso, terrorist groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda move freely about the countryside, attacking civilians and security forces alike. While the conflict has affected millions in various ways, for Saidu Sawadogo, it meant losing his livestock and forcing him to flee to Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou. Yes, my animals were stolen, he explains. He says terrorists came in the early hours of the morning in large numbers and took around 1,000 sheep. A few days later, they came back to the market and took everyone's cell phone away. And that's when he decided to leave, he says. Sawadogo is not alone. Meat prices are spiralling in Burkina Faso's markets because of rampant cattle rustling by terror groups. Mahamadou Barry runs a livestock market in Ouagadougou. Barry says that animal prices have increased over the past 3 years due to insecurity. He says many people were killed and animals were stolen. 3 years ago, the price of animals started at $300 to $430. Today, the price starts at $700. Before, we earned more, but it's a lot less these days, he complains. A toxic mix of factors is causing food prices to soar across the region, according to the World Food Programme. Cattle rustling by terror groups is just one small factor, says Antoine Renard, the WFP's country director for Burkina Faso.
There's a high demand in the region, so that's one aspect in terms of market dimension. There's a second one, which is the conflict, and of course it has an impact of how can you still continue to harvest, how can you make sure that your market are up and running in terms of Burkina Faso, and the last one is also the economic impact of the COVID-19.
The WFP says a record 28 million people are food insecure in West and Central Africa. It also says that in Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger, hunger could increase by 50% in the coming months, growing from 5.5 million to more than 8 million. The Sahel's more than 2.5 million displaced by conflict, like Soumaila Sawadogo, are especially vulnerable. He says the people in the area around the site for displaced people, where he lives, have been very helpful. But he says the problem the community has is one of lack of water and food. We only have help from the UN. They helped us with houses and food, rice, oil, beans and condiments. Meanwhile, the WFP says it will have to cut rations to those displaced by conflict if it does not receive more funding soon. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
The UN Refugee Agency reports the whereabouts of thousands of Eritrean refugees remain unknown 2 weeks after their camp came under attack in Ethiopia's northern Afar region. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Armed men entered the Barao refugee camp on February 3rd, prompting some 21,000 Eritrean inhabitants to flee for their lives. More than 4,000 trekked a long distance to Afar's regional capital, Samarra. Upon arrival, the refugees told the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, that the armed intruders stole their belongings and occupied their homes. They reported at least 5 refugees were killed and several women were kidnapped. UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshirkov says family members lost one another in the chaos of fleeing the camp. He says thousands of Eritrean refugees are staying with host families, but nothing is known about thousands of others who remain missing.
since December, mid-December, when violence started to intensify in the area of the camp, we lost access and our staff had to pull back, which means that we have not had firsthand information, including on these attacks. We are extremely worried about those that are cut off from aid and have not been accounted for so far.
Cheshikov says agencies are providing the refugees in Samara with shelter, relief items, food, and clean water. He says protection desks have been set up to identify and assist the most vulnerable refugees, separated children, and others with specific needs. He says the government has identified a temporary campsite and preparations are being made to quickly relocate the refugees there.
UNHCR remains extremely worried about the safety and well-being of thousands of Eritrean refugees caught up in the conflict. We condemn the attack on the refugee camp and reiterate the call for a cessation of hostilities to avoid further destruction and potential loss of life for refugees and Ethiopians alike.
Ethiopian government forces invaded the northern province of Tigray to fight rebels in November 2020. The conflict has since spread to the neighboring Amhara and Afar regions, wreaking havoc in those areas as well. The UNHCR says there are also large numbers of internally displaced Ethiopians in the Afar region, including some 300,000 uprooted by the recent fighting. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Health authorities in Malawi say a 3-year-old girl is paralyzed after contracting polio, the first known case in Africa in more than 5 years and the first in Malawi in 3 decades. Authorities say the child was infected by a strain of polio virus that matches a strain found in Pakistan. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
Until this week, Malawi had last reported a polio case in 1992. The Southern African country was declared polio-free in 2005, 15 years before the continent achieved the same status. Dr. Charles Mansambo, Secretary for Health in Malawi, told a local radio Friday that the polio virus strain detected in Malawi came from abroad.
This patient is Malawian, but the type of virus, the strain of virus of world polio that she has is not Malawian. It's from first identified Pakistani. So this is an imported strain.
So far, the girl who lives in the capital, Lilongwe, is the only identified case of polio in the country. Mansambo said all those who came into contact with the girl have tested negative for the polio virus. However, the Minister of Health said in a statement Thursday evening that it has intensified surveillance for the disease, especially among children from 0 to 15 years of age. President Lazarus Chakwera has declared a national health emergency. Polio is a contagious and life-threatening disease. The polio virus can infect a person's spinal cord, leaving them partially or fully paralyzed. Dr. Janet Kaita, the country representative for the World Health Organization in Malawi, says the alarm is justified.
Because as long as there's polio in Lilongwe, it's a threat not just in Malawi, it's a threat in the region. It's a public health event of international concern.
She says the WHO is deploying a team to Malawi to enhance disease surveillance, detect and identify cases, and to strengthen routine immunization.
The nature of having identified a child with polio highlights the need to make sure that a vaccination campaign is mounted, making sure that every last child under 5 years of age is reached with polio vaccine.
Malawi's health expert Maziko Matemba says the government should consider increasing budget allocations of the health sector,
so that some of these shocks are minimized or they are contained before they occur, because they also have an effect on the economy of the country, as we have seen with COVID.
President Chakwera said in a statement Thursday that after experiencing various natural disasters like Cyclone Idai, COVID-19, and Tropical Storm Anna early this year, a polio outbreak is the last thing any Malawian would want to hit the country. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Oil giant Shell's attempt to conduct a seismic survey of South Africa's pristine east coast has been dealt another blow. A court yesterday dismissed the company's application for leave to appeal an interim interdict, which put a stop to the operation on December 28th. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town, South Africa.
The Legal Resources Centre, which is fighting for the rights of fisher folk, is pleased with the ruling. The centre's attorney, Wilmeen Wickham.
We certainly welcome it, in particular because we're back in court next week to try and protect the rights of West Coast communities against seismic surveys on the other side of the country.
Is Shell involved in that case too?
We understand that Shell is a client of Searcher, who is the company doing the survey.
Wickham explains why the judge dismissed Shell's application Thursday, despite the company's lawyers arguing that its permit only allowed it to conduct the surveys between December 1st and May 31st until August next year.
It's difficult to appeal an interim interdict because you can only appeal an order that is final in effect. And Shell tried to argue that because this order is effectively stopping them from surveying for the rest of this year, that it is final in effect. The judge did not agree. The court did not think it was in the interest of justice, including that they didn't really have prospect of success in an appeal.
Liz McDade of the Green Connection, which is also an applicant in the West Coast case, explained that seismic surveys involve blasting sound off the seabed to detect pockets of gas and oil.
There are thousands of fishers along the coastline who depend on the sea for their livelihoods to put food on the table. With these seismic surveys, it's the precursor to oil and gas drilling, both of which activities could potentially harm the environment, which means that the livelihoods of those fishers would be undermined. So we are supporting the fishers in their struggles for justice and to ensure that their rights are upheld, and it's not the case of profits before people and the environment.
The interim interdict against Shell on the East Coast will remain in place until a hearing on May 30th, when it will have to argue why it should keep its permit. The applicants argue that a proper environmental impact assessment should be done first. Meanwhile, in an email, Shell South Africa's spokesperson Pam Tucker says the company is reviewing the court's decision. She says surveys of this nature have been conducted for over 50 years, with more than 15 years of extensive peer-reviewed scientific research. Ntaka says South Africa is highly reliant on energy imports for many of its energy needs, so if viable resources were to be found offshore, this could significantly contribute to the country's energy security and the government's economic development programs. This is Vicky Stark for VOA News in Cape Town, South Africa.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at